What is up, Level Up Nation? As it looked like the audio for some reason on OBS is not working once again. Now we're going to check it here real quick. Welcome everyone to Level Up Live. We'll do the intro three times over, it feels like, here on the live show. Nation, this is Level Up Live. This is the May 23rd edition, believe it or not, of OTN's Level Up Live, your home for the hottest takes in gaming news. My name is John, and I am joined, as always, by the King of the Courtside, the Courtside King. I'm going to draw this intro out real quick to ensure the speakers are not messed up. Also, the King of the Courtside, Joey. What's up, buddy?
Wow, the poor audio listeners.
There we go. The podcast is going to be suck.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Definitely some editing on that side ahead of us.
I can't edit. There's music playing. It's not going to happen.
Oh, that's true. Well, yeah. Good luck, guys. Good luck. We'll eventually make our way past the intro into the topics. But yeah, John, it's been a week, as it has been many a week before. I think we've been pretty busy the last couple weeks. We didn't record last week. But nope. We did record the week before, maybe? Or has it been 2 weeks? It's been a little while.
It's been 2 weeks.
Yeah, so it's been a little while. Obviously, the gaming world does not stop. There have been plenty of layoffs, unfortunately, that have happened over that time, as well as new game announcements. So exciting stuff and not so great stuff either. But there is plenty more to discuss this week as well as the weeks ahead as we draw closer to the no longer E3, but still Summer Game Fest / everyone is kind of doing their own thing and sometimes associated with Jeff, sometimes not associated. But there's a lot of good gaming news to come. In addition to some of the stuff we will be touching on tonight. Checking those audio levels.
I'm still over here trying to figure all this stuff out. Nation, you don't have to figure much out. The only thing you got to do, and it's very simple, and that's follow the show on social media. That is Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it. I know Elon technically officially killed Twitter. Twitter.com doesn't take you there anymore. I still type Twitter.com because it redirects because I'm that kind of guy. Facebook, OTN Media is the handle for X and Facebook. And while you are on X, formerly known as Twitter, or Threads, or Instagram, or all that fun stuff, follow Joey at Courtside King and myself at Is This Thing John. You can get all of our gaming takes as they break throughout the week, or in some cases, multiple weeks, because life happens. Life's a lot of fun. Simple as that. A lot of fun there as well. And Nation, while the live show on Twitch is the place to be, we do offer the show in the podcast form. If you listen this week, you'll get to hear in a very extended intro on that podcast. Level Up Podcast is available on your podcatcher of choice. Just look us up and we are there for you. Extra credit, hack into your grandma's Prime account and get her on Twitch and use that Twitch Prime on OTN Media. Earn Joey's eternal love and affection. By doing that today, just send him a DM and let him know grandma's been hacked and use that Twitch Prime on OTN. All right, Joey, aside from encouraging our listeners to hack their grandmother's Amazon Prime account to give us free money, what are we talking about today?
Yeah, absolutely, John. We had some big game releases. Senua's Saga, Hellblade 2 out for Xbox and PC. We have Nintendo coming out with Paper Mario, The Thousand Year Door. A few other big announcements as well scattered throughout. Some fun PvE modes getting added to other games. We have COD Black Ops 6 officially unveiled and revealed. We'll kind of drop through some of those teasers as we work our way through here. Some acquisition news across the board. Unfortunately, a little bit of layoff action as well. We'll briefly touch on that too. And NVIDIA. John, NVIDIA is doing absolutely wild things on the stock market. In addition to inside of our PCs, it's continued to be quite the story to watch. So we'll be touching on that as well.
Stock market. It's almost like GameStop's coming back or something. All right, Nation. We have our topics. Before we can dive into those topics, it is time for the beverage of choice, the drink of choice, the what's going to wet your whistle for the next hour of choice. Joey, your beverage, please.
I already did a nice beer flight on Tuesday, so we are going back to water this week. I do have
Tuesday.
A sparkling one, though. Black raspberry.
Tuesday.
What's that?
It was Tuesday. It was Tuesday.
I know it was Tuesday. I had quite a bit. We had two free flights from our real estate agent, so Lindsay and I drank quite a bit of alcohol.
Okay,
let
whoa,
the old
whoa,
liver
whoa,
recover.
Whoa. Real estate agent, do we need to have a conversation off air, sir?
No. This is the one that helped us find this place, but we've stayed in touch since.
good, I'm about to say. I don't know if I'm in the mood to help you guys move again. Any hoosies? No, I'm joking. I'm just giving you a hard time. You know I'm always there for you, buddy.
Of course. Sir,
because I'm feeling classy because I'm actually celebrating here. Little vino action, little wine actually from one of my new favorite vineyards here in Virginia, Cana, named promptly after my favorite miracle from that one dude 2,000 years ago. Water into wine is pretty freaking badass, if you ask me. Le Mirage is the mixture here. It's 2019. It is a pre-COVID wine. Mm-hmm. So it tastes like the world didn't shut down for 2 years. So it's delicious. It's very, very good. It's a very solid bottle, worth the $55 and worth the drive out there. Not sponsored. Please sponsor us. Amazing, amazing vineyard. Yeah, it's great. I absolutely love it. It's fantastic.
Nice. Might have to bring a bottle of that over at some point, sir. No. That's awesome. Is that out toward like Winchester area?
Actually, no. It's like just outside of Chantilly. It's
that's pretty close.
Yeah, it's actually not that far of a drive. It is. Let me see here. Let's see if I can get a Middleburg, Virginia.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's a very nice vineyard. They have a large barn where they're serving food, and you can order flights there as well. The tasting's done inside of this like really old restored house. It's incredible. The tasting's done on the second floor. The dude that's doing the wine tasting and everything, super knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of, it was really cool. It was a good time. Wine tastings are always fun, but that one was really, really fun as well. But yeah, highly, highly recommend Cana. Very good if you're here in the Northern Virginia area. Definitely, definitely check that one out. Super tasty, super delicious. Joey, we have our beverages. I could talk about wine all day, and this is not a wine podcast, even though
absolutely
I need to talk to you about that afterwards. We have our beverages. We have our topics. So it is time to get into our first segment, which, fun fact, is Nintendo. But guess what that segment's brought to you by? Joey, one guess.
Gamer Bites.
Gamer Bites, tonight's episode, Love Love Live, is presented by Gamer Bites, bite-sized gaming news delivered weekly directly to your inbox. Sign up today, otnmedia.org/GB. Sign up. Joey, what's popping in the world of Nintendo?
Absolutely, we do have Nintendo news. It feels like we go every couple weeks without too much coming from the red giant over there, but Nintendo has made an acquisition. No, they didn't go out and buy Activision Blizzard. No, it's not Take-Two Interactive. It's a nice little support developer, though. One that should come in handy as Nintendo looks to bring more and more games to the Nintendo Switch or the rumored Nintendo Switch 2. Nintendo has acquired Shiver Entertainment, the studio recently responsible for some nice big ports, those being Hogwarts Legacy. You guys might remember that as the best-selling game last year. Or Mortal Kombat 1, also a revered fighting title that made its way over to the Nintendo Switch via Shiver Entertainment. I think this is a great move, John, overall. Again, we're not seeing Nintendo pick up a huge developer or another publisher or just big development studios, but more someone who is already going to cater to the catalog they have or increase that catalog by helping third parties develop for their particular hardware. There's a quote from the article as well, from the press release rather. Shiver's focus will remain the same, continuing commissions that port and develop software for multiple platforms, including the Nintendo Switch. So the other thing we get confirmed there is Shiver will also continue porting to other platforms. Now, I think that's interesting because, one, it could be third-party, right? We see other third-party developers use Shiver. Income is coming in that way to Nintendo, and they're still porting out to Xbox, PlayStation, whatever. But the reverse of this could be that we see Nintendo look to expand their catalog and their publishing platforms, similar to what we're seeing right now with Xbox and PlayStation. PlayStation moving to PC, Xbox now publishing some more on Nintendo Switch and PlayStation. Now, do I think we get Mario on PlayStation or Xbox? Probably not. Do I think we maybe see Nintendo start to dabble a little bit with some of their smaller IPs, going to maybe PC first, or maybe eventually launching on a handheld? Whatever that ends up looking like, I think this could go the reverse as well. Now, again, Nintendo is its own giant, and who knows what they end up doing. People try to start local esports scenes, and they go out and sue them. So you just never know with Nintendo. But I do think it is a possibility that maybe this is a move to open that door up slightly as well.
For more lawsuits, or...
It could be either, actually, knowing them. Nintendo. Speaking of doors, though, John, the remake of Paper Mario, The Thousand Year Door, is set to drop tomorrow as well. For those who played this, this was a... Ooh, I should have done my research. Was this GameCube or N64? Do you remember? It's like 20 years ago.
I think it was GameCube.
GameCube? So Nintendo... Pretty sure it was GameCube. Paper Mario. We're going to assume GameCube. We can maybe fact check that here in a minute. But the Thousand Year Door is making its return here in a remaked edition for the Nintendo Switch. And so far, based on critics, we are hearing lots of praise. A lot of critics scoring this one right around a 9 out of 10 or a 5 out of 5 for the sites that use 5 as a score meter. Major review sites, Metacritic and OpenCritic sitting right around 90 as well, with 100% of critics recommending this one. A lot of people very happy with this remake so far.
Joey, are you ready for the answer?
Sure.
Look on your screen. 3, 2, 1. N64.
Hey, it was N64. Wrong, so okay. I had a feeling it was between those two. I think it was late N64 then.
It was 2000.
So that, yeah, that would have been late
N64. 24 years ago.
It's a very long time. I love the aesthetic of this, though. I think it's fun to take something that we know is 3D. Well, I guess it started out 2D technically, but to take it back to its 2D roots and then once again remaster it here, those nice, sweet new graphics. Again, the Switch is not really going to deliver the highest fidelity of graphics, but I do think this is a cool new style to see Mario in once again. Anything else to say on Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door? I know you haven't picked up that Switch yet, but when you eventually do, this one could be on your radar.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
100%. Yeah, it's definitely, a nice looking title. So if you guys are into Mario games or looking for your next Switch game, definitely one to consider with a lot of critic praise coming in so far for, again, Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door, dropping this Friday, May 24th. Next up is our PlayStation section. We're going to start with the somber news first before diving into the more interesting stuff of what could be to come for PlayStation moving forward. First, though, after 20 years, PlayStation has made the tough decision to shut down their London studio. The London studio has developed many, many titles over its 20-year existence. Unfortunately, PlayStation is making the move to shut the doors there. It's something we're seeing throughout the industry. It's incredibly unfortunate, but as we do continue to see different studios get shuttered, as people post-COVID have realized, hey, we overhired a lot of these developers. Now we have to cut back as the economies begin to cut back as well, as less people are playing games. More people are going outside and doing other things because they're not locked inside anymore.
What?
So that COVID boom has kind of come back down to reality. And unfortunately with that, a lot of these job cuts also coming through. Sony London PlayStation came out with a statement and they posted it on X, formerly Twitter. They went on to state, once this loads up for me, for over 20 years, London Studio has been home to some exceptionally talented and wonderful people in the games industry. As we close the doors and all go forward to new adventures, we wanted to say a heartfelt thank you to all our past, present players and colleagues who have supported us over the years. We've had one wild and wonderful journey. Again, it's always unfortunate seeing a studio close doors, especially a studio that has been around as long as PlayStation's London Studio has. They also were creating this really cool game that I wanted to make it out the door. It's kind of this like co-op adventure in the streets of London in with like a fantasy twist to it. So think like Harry Potter, how like you have the stuff going on in London, but this one kind of goes more the direction of dragons, kind of happening behind the scene from the sound of things. Unfortunately, we probably will not see that title see the light of day. I think PlayStation owns the IP, so maybe it gets revived at some point, but unfortunately it will not be coming out of the London studio now. PlayStation London, John. Anything else to say about them shuttering?
It's tough because, like, one day we're hearing about these studios closing down, then the next day we're hearing like Activision's expanding, other developers are expanding. It's like, I don't know. It makes me nervous. And you and I talked about this on Discord a bit. It's like we get what's going on in the world's economy. Like we get what's going on here in the U.S. when it comes to the economy as well. And stable is not the word anyone would ever use for it's tough because like we're hearing these cancellations, we're hearing like studios that made amazing games like Hi-Fi Rush are getting shuttered even though they did incredibly well at what they were supposed to do. And then, you know, they're like, oh well, it's so tough, you know, there's redundancies, there's big things here, there's big things there, we got to consolidate and save money, blah 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 blah. Video game sales are at an all-time high. Video game prices are at an all-time high. And we're downsizing. And then 3 days later, it's, oh, we're expanding. And then it feels like it's a vicious cycle where in like 2 years, it would not surprise me if Activision's like, oh, yeah, by the way, we're downsizing again. And we're laying people off again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, it's such a mess. I don't know how I feel with all these mixed announcements coming out. Like, obviously, people losing their jobs is never a good thing. But then, like, to turn around and, like, oh, we're expanding. It's like, do I really want to celebrate that? Like, feeling like, okay, cool, you're expanding, which also means, like, to me, being in corporate America, when you expand and you hire people on, you're also the first people to go because you're generally the newest. So I don't know. To me, it's such a weird time in the video game industry.
So, well, we're in the PlayStation section. I'll save it for Xbox, but I do have some more details coming out about the whole Tango situation. We'll slide that in over there. But yes, overall, it's incredibly sad to see more layoffs happen. And unfortunately, it feels like every podcast episode for the last 9 to 12 months, we've had a layoff here or there. I don't think it's going to be something that stops anytime soon. And I don't think acquisitions are going to stop either, which, similar to what John was saying, is kind of the polar opposite here with these layoffs. Why are we still laying off when we're still acquiring? Just one of those things. Like, I get redundancies, right? Like, you don't need two marketing departments necessarily, but to lay off developers as well that are developing completely different projects, I think it's a lot harder to defend those overall outside of a balance sheet. Next up for PlayStation, according to a new job listing, PlayStation is developing a new mobile platform for developing, publishing, and operating free-to-play mobile games. I can't say this is surprising to me. I don't think this is surprising to most people. We know a lot of people are looking into developing mobile games, but mobile games have been crazy high revenue makers. Clash of Clans and all those things made by Rovio, like Angry Birds. Candy Crush was one of the big reasons Microsoft went out to get Activision Blizzard. You have Sony now developing here. And I think one of the things that really makes mobile attractive, outside of the giant amounts of money being thrown at Fortnite and Roblox and Minecraft and all these other games we mentioned, is the fact that now we have the European Union pushing back on Apple and Google as well. With them taking down some of those restrictions, saying we have to open up these stores at least a bit more in the European market space, I think we're going to see a lot of people dive in. We know Epic is already looking at launching a store sometime later this year, I think, is the timeline Epic has given. Microsoft is looking at launching one as early as July. It's kind of going to be a browser-based store, so I'm curious how that's going to work out. Now we have PlayStation developing one. Could be an app, could be browser-based as well. I think I am very mixed on what the potential success of these is going to be, John, and I'm curious to get your thoughts as well. When it comes down to mobile stores, I love the idea of more money going to developers. I love the idea of not paying a premium upfront to get V-Bucks or whatever the currency may be, because you're going to get that extra charge to make up for some of the percentages taken by Apple or Google or whoever. But on the flip side, the inconvenience of having to go to a mobile browser or download another app to go in here and then to click something, to have it go through this store and then eventually download through the Google or Apple app anyway, it just feels a little convoluted. And I'm curious how many people are actually going to buy into that without other incentives.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Sony always does something against the grain. I love it. But just out of curiosity, Joe, I pulled up the job responsibilities here and their requirements. And I love this, right? Obviously, this is probably not an entry-level position. But still, I love the desired skills, 8 years of professional experience in the mobile game industry. I feel like mobile games have really started booming over the past five, maybe six or seven. A BS in computer science or equivalent. What's the equivalent of computer science? Like, whatever. Unity, Unreal Engine, all that fun stuff. So, I mean, like, this is kind of cool. Like, it's neat to see Sony kind of branch out into the mobile game market a little bit more. You've said it for forever since we started this show back on episode one, Joey. Mobile gaming is the future. And as much as I hate it when you say that, because I hate mobile gaming with a passion, it's booming for a freaking reason. Everyone's got a cell phone. Everyone can download these stupid games and play them on the go. And they make money because you can always justify a $2.99 purchase every other day. And then you take a look at your account after the end of the year and you're like, holy crap, I spent $2,000 on this free-to-play game. But you know, it's just, I don't know, like, there's money to be made. Everyone plays it. And that's really where the big future of gaming lies. Not everyone's going to have a console, and everyone's going to have a gaming PC. So, mobile's really the way to go. And I don't know, like, Sony moving into it makes me a little nervous, but other than that, I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's 100% the case, right? Like, you, to sell a console game, you have to sell a console. To sell a PC game, you have to sell a PC. A lot of the average gamers or average people are not going to go out there and buy a PC, buy a console. You look at a mobile gamer, your grandmother has a mobile device. Maybe she wants to play Candy Crush. Maybe your mother does. Maybe your niece does. Like, there's so many opportunities out there because everyone has a phone anyway for texting and calling, scrolling the internet, whatever they want to do on there. So the device is already in their hands. The device is already purchased. Then from that, it's just purely selling that game. And like you said, hitting those small microtransactions, the $1.99, the $2.99, those little transactions will add up over time. We've seen it with Fortnite. Friggin' Fortnite is bringing in, I think it's still around 100,000 something a month just in transactions. I can only imagine Roblox and Minecraft and such are up there as well. So there is definitely a lot of money to be made in mobile, especially the fact that the hardware is already in most people's hands already. And if you're trying to do whatever Microsoft said, that number, I think it's like 3 billion gamers. The best way to reach that many gamers is through stuff on mobile, whether that's cloud, whether that's native, using the device already in their hands is the best way to go about it. So we'll be curious. I just think for me, the biggest hard factor for mobile gaming, or at least for these companies entering mobile gaming, sure, a PlayStation game, an Xbox game, they'll sell fine as games, but how do you get them to go to that storefront to cut out that 20, 30% or whatever Apple takes? I think that is going to be the challenge. Me, I purely love buying through other stores. I try to buy through Steam because they take a smaller percentage. I try to buy through the Microsoft store because they also take a smaller percentage from developers. But when it comes down to it, am I really going to go out of my way to download a browser store, make a transaction, click something that then puts me back into the app store? It just sounds like a lot of movement for something super simple. And I feel like unless you offer some kind of like dual licensure or some kind of reward point system, I don't know if an extra dollar or two saved here and there is going to be enough for a lot of people to make all those moves. So we'll have to wait and see. But yes, PlayStation is diving in, Epic is diving in, Microsoft is diving in, and I'm sure more. I would be stunned if someone like a Valve with Steam doesn't try to build some kind of mobile platform either. I mean, there's just so many out there, right? So many different people involved in the gaming space. NVIDIA is another one that could probably make a move there as well. So I definitely think there are people to watch in the space. I'm just curious how much investment is going to be bought with these particular platforms, and especially with EU only being the one kind of pushing it right now. We don't really have much push in the US and some other countries. So outside of Europe, it's still kind of free-flowing, and I don't know exactly how that's going to work. So we'll see how things develop over time. But for now, keep an eye on mobile devices and those mobile platforms to come. Next up is the green giant of Xbox, John. They have been in the news for good things and bad. Obviously, Tango Gameworks shutting down a couple weeks ago. I don't think we were able to talk about it on the show. And we don't have to dive too much into the layoff itself. And I am not going to defend it because I am heartbroken seeing Hi-Fi Rush's developer shut down. And I have cried many a tear over it. It's very disappointing. I really wanted a sequel to that game. But unfortunately, gaming is also a business. Not enough people downloaded it. Not enough people bought it. And if a game is not being sold, regardless of critical praise, it is tough to justify keeping the developer around. Now, was the talent there to foster it into something even bigger, foster the franchise? I would say so. I think absolutely the studio is incredibly talented. But one thing I have heard recently is that one of the ideas behind Bethesda restructuring itself under the Xbox umbrella is to try to bring their studios more closely together where they're working on other things here and there. We've seen it a bit on the Xbox side with the Coalition, the studio behind Gears of War. They're helping develop some tech for other studios. Ninja Theory, they worked with Ninja Theory here on Hellblade Senua's Saga, or Senua's Saga rather, Hellblade 2. We saw some other studios like State of Decay's developer work on some other studios behind the scenes with some of their engine stuff too. So I think one thing we're seeing on the Xbox side under Xbox Studios is a lot of crosswork between projects. I think Bethesda is trying to match that now, where we can accelerate a few projects, say like a Fallout, you don't have to wait a whole decade maybe on, because there is a little bit more cross work being made over there. Now, the issue with Tango and why Tango was cut, supposedly, I don't think this is the full story, but supposedly because they were in Japan and they were so far away from everyone else, it was difficult for them to integrate with the system that Bethesda was trying to build. And because they had just finished a game and were looking at hiring next, they became the easiest target to cut off because of that distance and because of the fact that they were about to go into a hiring phase. So it was just easier to say, hey, we need to save this money. We're not going to do this, and we have to make cuts anyway, so we're going to cut you. Again, incredibly unfortunate because Tango is probably one of my favorite studios under that umbrella, but I think it does make a little bit more sense with that in mind. Now, again, back to what John was saying, should we be laying off and hiring people still? Absolutely not, but it is something that is unfortunately happening it's across wild. The industry right now, and we're continuing to see it. Take-Two just did something similar as well. Bethesda did something similar. or Microsoft rather, under Activision, they made a new studio, and Bethesda had cut one. But yeah, it is unfortunate, but that explanation does make a little bit more sense to me as to why that was the studio that was cut, even if it was incredibly unfortunate. With that being said, there's positive news to cover. Senua's Saga Hellblade 2 has launched to incredibly mixed reactions and polarizing scores from critics. John, this is one of the weirdest critic scores I think I've ever seen in gaming in the last decade or so. We have a ton of people rating this game a 10 out of 10, and a ton of people rating it like a 7 out of 10. There really is not much middle ground. I'm not seeing many 8s out there. There's a few 9s here and there as well. But for a lot of people, it's a perfect game. And for others, it is just an average game, and there just doesn't seem to be any above-average ratings in there. I think graphically speaking, every single review, even the ones that were like 5 out of 10, have said this is probably the most graphically intensive and amazing game they have seen to date yet. I mean, there's a reason that Epic keeps sending out trailers of this game for their Unreal Engine 5. They've just done an incredible job, and John, I don't know if you've had a chance to dive in with everything you've had going on yet, but the way that it moves between cutscenes and action, it reminded me of when you started Starfield and we were like flying and we're like, okay, are we ever going to get to that planet? There was a part at the beginning where you're climbing a rock. I thought it was a cutscene. So I'm like sitting there just like waiting to climb this rock and it's just not moving. And I'm like, and then I push the controller analog stick up and it starts moving. I'm like, oh my gosh, that was not a cutscene. That was legitimately graphics. It was just wild to me. So stuff like that is very mind blowing throughout the game. And I think, I mean, we can spend some time on graphics first, but this to me is a showcase graphically. Do I have issues with gameplay and stuff? Absolutely, and we'll touch on those. But I think graphically, I truly do not think there's a game that rivals this at the moment on the market.
Yeah, graphically, I mean, even when they kept putting teasers out even years ago, we made that comment, Joey, that this game graphically looks absolutely insane. It's going to come down to execution. Like, graphics don't make an entire game.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they help with the immersion, but if the story is bad, if the gameplay is buggy, if, you know, the things that people play games for, if those are bad, that's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Having not played it, having only watched, I was not stranded on a cliffside waiting to see if it was a cutscene or not. I do feel your pain, though, on that. But yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of an interesting dynamic, though, right? That the graphics are that good in game that you thought it was a cutscene, right? Like, that's good. Normally, cutscene graphics are better than the actual game.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that's more a compliment than anything else, and goes to show the power of the engine that's being used to create this game. I think that's absolutely incredible. It doesn't surprise me that this game is being like, that's getting a polarized reaction, whether either you love it or it's very average, right? It's kind of like when we review games on here that we've played, Joey. It's like, you know, one of us may like, oh, this game was great, hits everything I'm looking for in a game. And then the person's like, yeah, you know, it was okay. It wasn't bad. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a good game. Again, without having played this game, without actually being able to critique it in that sense, I can kind of see how it may be divisive,
mm-hmm.
Or just you can get those mixed bags. But like you were saying, generally, you know, if a game is like an 8 or a 9, it's mainly 8 or 9 with the random IGN 4 that they throw in there. I'm kind of curious. What did IGN put for this game? Because they're usually like ridiculously off compared to
everyone else. I think IGN was an 8.
They would split the difference.
I know, right?
It's so stupid.
IGN, let's see. 8 out of 10, yep.
Yeah, that's so dumb. Anywho, IGN, again, outlier, throw you out the window. Between a 7 and a 10, I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, as gamers, if the game speaks to you, go play it. And if you don't like it, it happens, right? Don't always listen to critics, because critics are paid to get clicks, to get views, to be divisive, to rile things up. So don't always necessarily go by critics. If it looks good, simple as that. If anything, the fact that it's pretty split between 7s and 10s makes the game more intriguing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to find out why some people are like, oh, it's a perfect game, it's amazing, it's fantastic. And other people are like, yeah, you know what? Like, like GoldenEye 007 was an 8 out of 10. You know, that's bet. No, obviously, you know, graphically, whatever. So I'm kind of curious. I want to play it and see what I would rank it as in comparison to what the expert critics rank it as going forward.
Yeah, I mean, this, I would love to see this on your TV. I can only imagine, like, on your big Sony Bravia or whatever it's called. Like, this is going to be a very, very nice experience on that. I can only imagine. But yeah, overall, I've only played two chapters, so I am not very far. I am at the beginning of chapter 3. I think my biggest thing, and I am also in that weird IGN space at the moment, where I'm like an 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10, and this is why. It is not my type of game. I enjoyed the first one. I think it was critically amazing. Would I play it again? Probably not. It's one of those experiences that I love to some degree. It's a little bit of a darker game than I normally would play. And I think the way they've done certain elements of it, especially the mental health aspect of it, is phenomenally well done. I think to this day, the original game still has some of the best audio design we've ever seen in gaming over the 40 decades it's been. I mean, it's just phenomenal. Play with headphones. Please go play the original. There is some of the coolest level design I've ever seen in games out there. Now, Senua's 2, again, just two chapters in, I think graphically phenomenal. I think the difference, and this is why you have the outlier, it doesn't feel like a game as much. It feels like a completely new medium that we have not experienced before to me. It feels like almost as if a game and a movie had a baby. It feels like you're playing through a cinematic experience more than a game itself. There are combat set pieces. There are puzzles. They're not super difficult to work your way through. I do recommend beefing the combat up to hard to make it a little bit more... it doesn't really make it that hard, but it makes it a little bit more... it puts weight behind it, I guess, is the best way of saying.
Challenging.
Yeah, challenging or, like, rewarding, I guess. Like, it feels like your sword is a little bit heavier in those higher-level difficulties. You have to actually parry a little bit more effectively or dodge at certain moments, and it just feels a little bit more rewarding. With that being said, I think it feels like an experience. I wouldn't call it a walking sim. There is quite a bit of walking, but you're also really immersed into the audio of it, into the graphics of it. It really feels like you're in the environment. You obviously have the voices and everything working in your head with the audio. The sound design of the landscape is also incredibly well done. It just, to me, it feels like an experience. It feels like the Dolby Digital Cinema type of experience while you're controlling the character. And again, yes, there are puzzles. Yes, there are set pieces that definitely feel more gamey. But overall, it feels, I would not define it as a game as much as I would define it as a new experience. And I think that is really what makes Ninja's Theory special here. Not that it is a bad game, but the fact that they're pushing boundaries, they're trying something completely new. They're trying something we necessarily haven't seen in the industry before outside of the original game to some degree. And even then, they're pushing this further. To not be able to tell the cutscene from the actual action at certain points is astounding to me. And I can only imagine that gets even better as the game goes on. On top of that, as they add new enemy types, as they increase the combat capabilities, I'm sure this game will just get better and better as it goes. But with that being said, again, this is not my type of game. I don't even know if I would define it fully as a traditional game. I just think it is an experience that is worth experiencing. It's very different, very cool. So I can see why it splits so many people. If you go in wanting a traditional game, Senua's Hellblade 2 is not going to be for you. If you're open to experiencing something completely different, something that really dives into mental health, something that really dives into audio design, something that obviously is amazing cinematographically, I don't even know if that is a word, but graphically, it's phenomenal. I definitely think it's worth loading up, trying, even if it's just the first level or so that you're playing through. It is quite the experience. So with that being said, I don't know what I would rate it. Again, two chapters in, probably 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10, somewhere in there.
Okay, IGN.
But it's just so weird, right? Like, we have this scale that we've used for games for years. It just doesn't feel like a traditional game, so it just feels like it just doesn't belong on the scale. Do I rate it lower? Probably not. Do I rate it higher? Probably not. So I can see why you do have a few of those outliers, or inliers in this case, with IGN around an 8 out of 10. Definitely worth experiencing, though. Definitely worth booting up, trying a level, especially if you have next-gen hardware or a PC that can run it. I can only imagine what this is like on a high-level graphics card. I probably can't even fathom what that is like, but it runs incredibly well on Xbox Series X hardware, probably eventually making its way to PS5 as well, if I had to guess. So definitely one worth checking out there. Okay, I think that's enough Hellblade for now. Anything else you want to say on that? I really want you to try it, John. I know it's probably not your type of game either, but you should at least launch it up and try the first level at some point, because I'm very curious to hear your thoughts.
Sir, you act like I got time.
I know. You got to carve it out here and there. it is doable. I know it is. I've seen you play some FIFA over there. But yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. Speaking of time, if you guys have time, I tried a little bit of this one. I haven't been able to dive too much into it, but Halo got a new PvE Survive the Undead COD Zombies playlist. For those who loved zombies on the old Call of Duty games, I think they started with Call of Duty World at War, if I remember correctly, after Modern Warfare or COD 4 Modern Warfare. They've done a phenomenal job with this. They've built everything in Forge. You even have like the pack-a-punch stuff. You have the little random crate thing. You have all the buys built into the wall. They've done a really, really good job. And I think adding Halo enemies instead of just the normal zombies really adds kind of a new flair to it. So they do have the World of War map, and then they have another map. And again, I haven't kept up with the recent cons, so it could be another COD clone map, but it's kind of an outdoor snowy arena with different gates that open up as you progress through the different waves. Really fun stuff. Some cool modded weapons as well. I won't give those spoilers away, but definitely some cool stuff to look at how they've modded those weapons, as well as the scripting done throughout it as well. So really, really cool stuff. Again, made from a Forge community, the Forge Falcons, available now on Halo Infinite, at least for the next 2 weeks. You can always find it in the community playlist, but it has a dedicated playlist for now. Under the Halo Workshop, and I highly recommend checking out, especially if you have friends that are into the multiplayer aspects, the PvE side. This is a really cool way to introduce them to PvE, and it's really well done overall. I won't make you speak on Halo, John, but I think you should consider downloading it and playing some zombies with me. We'll see if I can get anyone else from OTN to do so as well. Next up is a rumor. We talked about PlayStation adding their mobile store. Xbox may be adding a consistent social UI to games on all platforms, which is probably not a surprise to anyone. As they continue to publish on other platforms, as well as PlayStation on PC, we saw PlayStation recently give out trophy support, as well as a friends list for Ghost of Tsushima when it launched on Steam. Expect stuff similar on Xbox, especially those ones going to PlayStation and Nintendo. Eventually, there will be some kind of Xbox guide button. I don't know what all that's going to include. It could include achievement support. It definitely will include some friend list of some kind, but it looks like that will be coming across different platforms as well as we continue moving down the line. And I think, John, in line with the mobile stores, it just makes sense, right? If you're going to build an ecosystem where your game is available everywhere, especially stuff like a Minecraft that's very popular, why not have an easy hub for everyone to kind of hit that friends list at? Xbox is already the PC you're playing on. Whether you're playing Steam or Epic, you're still playing on Windows. So there are ways to link it in there as well. I think this could be really well done. But again, Microsoft is not always known for their best UI stuff. I think the Xbox side of things, they've done a very good job with UI. On the PC side, it's been a little questionable with some of the Windows updates and choices they've made there. So I'm curious where this falls between the two parties. Last but not least, in the Xbox section, and technically this is multi-platform, it is going to hit everywhere, but the developer does fall under Xbox, and for this sake, it did fall under our Xbox News section this week. Call of Duty Black Ops 6 has been revealed. John, we got a crazy teaser site, which kind of reminded me a little bit of some of the stuff we've gotten from musicians like 21 Pilots before, where you get nice little teasers here and there that are kind of playable as you work your way through them. This one was a very interesting kind of style of a almost like a security camera footage that people were finding different channels on that showed different events happening worldwide, kind of leaning into this truth versus lies story. And then we eventually got the full reveal here, and also showing us the redacted showcase after the Xbox showcase will be focused on Call of Duty Black Ops 6. Surprising absolutely no one. But the logo is now clear. There's no blur. We also do not have the big black redacted line over Call of Duty Black Ops 6. That name is now revealed. And given everything else we've heard, it's very likely this will be Gulf War related, and we'll hear more about it on June 9th. I'm actually kind of excited for this Call of Duty. Why am I excited for Call of Duty? Because, one, this is at an extra year of development, which I think is going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. We've seen some Call of Duties released not quite fully ready. We've seen short campaigns, like with Modern Warfare 3. We've seen buggy multiplayers, like with Modern Warfare 2. This one has had an extra year to cook in the oven. I'm curious how that ends up playing out for it. Additionally, you have them integrated into the Microsoft team now. Does that show its fruits this year? I'm not sure, but I do think there will be some further PC support coming through as a result of that eventually. Again, might be this year, might not be this year, but I do think we'll eventually see some pluses in that area as well. But this should be a full package. This is going to have everything. It's going to have a big campaign, supposedly the first open world campaign in Call of Duty. It's going to have a very vast multiplayer. It's going to have zombie modes. It sounds like it is going to deliver in many aspects. Now, again, sounds like versus actually delivering is going to be something we have to wait and see. But we also know it's going to be in Game Pass, which means I am 100% more likely to give it a try than I was if it was not in Game Pass. So we'll see how that debate ends up working out for Microsoft in the end. If they lose a ton of money, we might not see it in Game Pass again. But for now, at least this title sounds like it'll be headed that way.
Joey, by including Call of Duty in the Xbox section, I don't know if you heard that sound from around the world. That was all the Sony fanboys screaming into the sky. I told you so. They're taking everything. They're not going to let us play Call of Duty. It's going to be an Xbox exclusive. Joey, even with the Level Up podcast, put it under Xbox. I think you opened up a can of worms. I think that's going to be the campaign in Black Ops 7. As the Sony pony is coming after you, Joey. So prepared. Be prepared, sir. It's going to happen.
Wild, wild times. But yes, Call of Duty will be available everywhere. Unfortunately, I do not think it'll be making Nintendo Switch this year. I'm not going to confirm that. We'll have to wait and see. But I believe that we'll wait for the next Switch hardware when eventually it does come out, if it doesn't keep getting delayed over and over and over. But it will be coming to PC. It will be coming to Xbox Series X and S, and it will be coming to PlayStation 5. I do think the bigger question here is, does Microsoft and Activision force people to upgrade consoles? Do they allow it to drop on Xbox One and PS4 still? Is it even capable of dropping on those? Can those systems run it? We don't really know, and I think that's going to be one of the big questions that Xbox and Activision need to answer on June 9th when we eventually see more about this. If it doesn't go to those, does it going to Game Pass increase people jumping to from a PS4 to an Xbox Series console, or do they just continue to stick with PlayStation? Do Xbox One owners feel the need to upgrade, or will they just continue to play it on cloud? I think those are some of the big questions that we will see eventually answered. Probably not on June 9th, but we'll start to see a little bit of that inkling of the direction that things will be headed as we move closer to the launch with this later this fall. I can't remember. I think this is set for a November launch, if I remember correctly. It could be late October, but I want to say this one is going to be November. So lots of stuff to watch there. Again, Call of Duty Black Ops 6 should be an exciting one. Should be Golf War. Should hear more about it June 9th. Next, over to PC. This one, again, hits multiple platforms, but they're mostly known for their PC entourages. Larian Studios, the team behind award-winning Baldur's Gate 3, has opened a seventh studio, this one in Warsaw, Poland. John, this is the third studio I think we've seen open in Poland this week. A lot of studios opening up there. That new one we talked about with Activision also opened up in Poland, if I remember correctly, Elsewhere Studios. Pulling a lot of the team from CD Projekt Red, the team behind Cyberpunk and The Witcher, over to that new studio as well. In addition to the seventh new studio that Larian has announced, they've also confirmed they are working on two ambitious RPGs. What those are, we have absolutely no idea. It could be a brand new IP. It could be Baldur's Gate 4. Could be Baldur's Gate 3.5. We really don't know at this point, but we do know they can make ambitious RPGs. They've done it before. They just friggin' swept every single award with Baldur's Gate 3. I think it won the Big Four or whatever, as we call it in gaming, as far as game award shows. It won the BAFTAs. It won DICE. It won Jeff's show over at the Game Awards. I can't think of the other one. The Golden Joysticks might have been the fourth big one. But there are quite a few gaming award shows out there. Baldur's Gate swept pretty much every one of them. Absolutely impressive stuff. And we'll see what Larian brings together with this new studio and with these two new RPGs when they do eventually launch. So you getting some baseball news over here in chat.
I'm already aware of it. I knew Rizzo and the Learners were in Rochester tonight, and I'm not going to keep my hopes up because I don't trust either one of them. I am aware that James Wood was pulled in the fifth inning in tonight's game, which means hopefully he'll be debuted on Saturday, is my guess.
About time, is what we say in the industry.
That's an understatement, but nonetheless, yeah, I saw. I'm watching. I'm also watching. Apparently, some guy guessed on Wheel of Fortune tonight something that was very wrong and they still aired it, which was kind of interesting.
Oh.
Yeah, it's
spicy.
So, yeah, I'll share it to you later, Joey. If you want to know what it is, make sure you join us in Discord, and I'll put it in Discord also. We'll put that in chat real quick as well, and you can follow along with what it's pretty freaking entertaining. But yeah, any hoosies. Yeah.
What a mess. yes, chat. I think we'll be swapping by or slipping by some VC later tonight after the show, which does not have too much left, John. So let's hit these last topics. Then we can slide over to discord.me/OTN. If you guys are listening to the podcast, make sure to join our Discord server as well. Join the conversation from gaming to sports to books and more over there as well.
We don't have much left. And I just scrolled down. There's a whole nother page of notes.
It's going to go nice and quick. Speaking of quick, IGN has been scooping publications up pretty quickly. They've acquired Eurogamer, VG247, Rock Paper Shotgun, Games Industry Biz, and more. I think this is a terrible move for the industry. Yes, IGN is technically an OTN competitor, right? They're obviously much, much bigger than us, doing the same kind of thing. But my issue here is if you take so many different people and you continue to combine them together, you're going to get one voice from these publications. So, yes, you're going to get some of the flair from Rock, Paper, Shotgun that they currently have. But unfortunately, as you continue to move these publications together, you're going to have the same people overlooking all of them. And with that being said, you're going to end up with more and more content that doesn't quite give the variety that it maybe once had. On top of that, we've seen a lot of investments from... I'm not going to say this one in particular, but there have been questionable investments made in the gaming industry from some organizations and different countries and such that may not have the same ideals as a lot of other people. And we've seen some of those forced upon these different companies, whether they be game studios, whether they be publications, that have been acquired, and they kind of continue to push their way down. So I am curious to see what the impact to these end up being once IGN fully takes over as the umbrella. And the investors behind IGN also kind of play their role in this as well. The other thing is like AI, right? Like where AI is continuing to take over jobs of journalists and will only get better and better over time. So that is the big question mark as well. Like the journalists are currently writing the content that stuff like ChatGPT takes. But if ChatGPT can put it all out, are those journalists going to stay around afterwards? Then if they don't, where does ChatGPT pull its data from? I think there's a lot of questions around games journalism in general right now. And again, seeing them combine here, I think could be a worrying trend, especially seeing all the layoffs that we've seen happen with the acquisitions in the gaming industry as well. Do we see some mass layoffs here? I do think there will be redundancies from this move. What those end up looking like, we're just going to have to wait and see. We do know some layoffs are already planned from IGN, so I don't know what the full impact of those will be, but they will be coming here soon enough. Anything else to say on IGN scooping up a bunch of publications, John?
No, because their reviews are just going to be just as bad as always. I'm leaving it there. I don't like IGN. Not because they're just a competitor. I just don't like them because I think they've gotten bad over the years.
Yeah, I mean, I typically do not pull too many IGN articles. There are some good people over there, don't get me wrong. And I think everyone is talented in their own way. I just don't like the approach that IGN takes at certain points. I feel like the bias will come through in certain aspects. If someone really likes PlayStation and doesn't like Xbox, you see it. If someone really likes Xbox and doesn't like PlayStation, it bleeds through a lot as well. And I think there's not quite as much balance from a publication as big as they are, and that can lead to some kind of clickbaity titles, to be honest. They're one of those publications that put a lot of clickbaity stuff out. Not the biggest fan of stuff like that. Now, does it earn clicks? Does it earn the revenue, like John was saying? Absolutely. Does it feel honest and trustworthy? Not half the time. I mean, when a title and an image completely don't match anything in the article, it really throws me off. I get it. You ended up with something to aggravate fanboys. You're going to get them to click on the piece, or you're going to put something misleading, and then you end up going into the piece, and it's just not there at all. It's one of those things. And again, they do put out quality content. It just feels like some of the content has gone astray over there, and I'm curious to see how that's now going to impact all these other publications as well. Next up in the news is another acquisition, this one from Atari. They've acquired Intellivision. Wade Rosen went on to state that this was a very rare opportunity to unite former competitors and bring together fans of the golden age of gaming. On top of this, we saw a lot of people coming out and saying, hey, maybe Nintendo or PlayStation will acquire Sega now as well to be the next opportunity to unite former competitors. We'll see what happens in that space. But this acquisition I kind of do like, John. It's one of those things that Atari and Intellivision have kind of... I don't want to say outstayed their purpose, but they've definitely needed to find ways to reform themselves in the modern age. And I think pairing up two old-time rivals to kind of try to be creative and find new ways to stand out a little bit more in today's day and age of gaming could be something good for the industry, kind of bringing back to its roots, but also adding some new IPs into the mix. Or maybe we see them kind of take those older IPs and re-envision them in a new way, and I think doing it together could be a big positive. So this is an acquisition I kind of like overall. No other vision to be had. Ubisoft's new Call of Duty competitor, XDefiant, has welcomed in over 1 million unique players in its first 3 hours. But, John, who would have expected it? There were server issues. It seems to be a very common thing here with new launches. I think the biggest question here, right? XDefiant is not a bad game. Does it bring a lot of differences from COD? Not really. It does a lot of what COD does, and it does it decently well. I think there's some hit registration issues overall with the game. Obviously, I think those also have to do with the servers kind of being plagued around launch time. I think some of the character classes are interesting. Do I think the equipment brings stuff unique to the game? Not necessarily. I think a lot of the equipment and skills we've seen in other games before. I think the biggest question mark for this is what is its staying power going to be when a new Call of Duty drops? When Black Ops 6 drops later this year, is anyone still going to be playing XDefiant outside of the little streamers that have built communities around it? I just really don't know if they are. Now, if it's a bad Call of Duty, then yes, I think you could see maybe people go back to this game. It's going to carry over their progress year over year. You're going to get new maps in. It's kind of going to be like a live service Call of Duty game that lasts more than a year or two. Now, I think people really like the change of Call of Duty with completely new weapons, completely new maps, completely new time periods potentially coming in. And I think that is going to be a tough one for Ubisoft to compete against when you see something completely shifting from a Modern Warfare to an older World War II to a Black Operation type of situation. And I think Call of Duty just, it's a monster, right? It sells crazy copies. A lot of people buy consoles just for Call of Duty. And the fact that they can switch games around and still have everyone buy them every single year, it's like EA with FIFA or EA with Madden. They just continue to pump out very similar titles every year, and Call of Duty is changing some more things up. Yes, the formula stays the same, but at least they're changing the time period. They're changing the weapons up and such. I just don't know if XDefiant has enough in it, especially with all the delays coming through. I don't know if they've done enough to really stand out and last the wave that is Call of Duty coming later this year. What do you think? Do you think XDefiant has the stopping power to get it done?
Absolutely not. No. Call of Duty is in the same tier as Fortnite. As soon as Call of Duty comes out, XDefiant's done. It's not even close. Like, congratulations to, 1 million unique players within 2.5 hours of launch. Awesome. Great. Apex kind of did the same thing and couldn't take down Fortnite. Granted, there were missteps along the way, but still, no chance this does anything when Call of Duty comes out. Call of Duty will absolutely destroy not just XDefiant, but other games that come out around the same time also. Those play times are going to drop, just kind of like Joey, the sports gamers out there.
Mm-hmm.
We got a college football release date for EA Sports College Football, and everyone's already saying, "Oh, July 9th, I'm not playing MLB The Show anymore." And MLB The Show has been my number one game for the last 3, 4, 5 years in terms of play time. I fully plan on switching over to Call of Duty. Oh boy, that's not going to happen. college football, when that comes out, and that's going to be absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I'm going to come back to baseball, but I guarantee it's going to cut into my playtime, hands down.
Yeah, that's going to be the biggest thing, right? Like, can it last? And I just don't know if it can. I think the best example recently, we've touched on Apex Legends, but the finals, right? The finals had a huge launch. Are you still playing the finals, John? I know you and I enjoyed it quite a bit. I haven't launched it in probably a month at this point, and I feel like that is the average audience out there as well.
Yeah.
It was super fun. It was super different. This one, in comparison, is even closer to Call of Duty, so it doesn't offer as much differences as the finals did. A lot of people love that game. A lot of people were diving in. A lot of people were spending money in it, and then here we are about 3 to 4 weeks or whatever later, and that hype has just kind of dropped off pretty considerably. So we'll see what it ends up doing. My hopes are not very high for XDefiant. I think it's a cool concept. I'm glad Ubisoft is trying to push the genre forward. I just don't know if there's enough unique stuff there, even with bringing in characters like Splinter Cell characters, Rainbow Six characters, whatever IPs they end up tapping into. I just don't know if there's enough popularity there up against something like a Call of Duty with the similarities already being there. Next up is the game of the year, not from this past year, but the previous year. Elden Ring is finally getting its new DLC, Shadow of the Erdtree. We do have a trailer we can play here briefly. Elden Ring being that big Souls-like game, right? Won a ton of awards, not quite as many as Baldur's Gate, but won quite a few in and of itself, pushing that Souls-like genre forward with a world built by George R.R. Martin of Game of Thrones fortune. It's a really interesting kind of IP, very unique, very grotesque, very difficult bosses. I can't even tell you the number of bosses that have absolutely destroyed me in that game. How many have I destroyed? Very, very few. That game will probably take me decades to beat, if I even ever beat it. They are quite difficult. We did see Kai recently run through a big old stream trying to knock down some bosses. Can't remember his final playtime, but it was up there in the hundreds of hours before he beat the final boss. And that's skipping a lot of the minor bosses out there as well. Overall, Elden Ring is going to be one of those games that continues to push the industry forward, especially in the Souls-like genre. And I think this new expansion is going to probably pop off when it drops off later this year, June 21st. Really pretty, but very grotesque. Next up, and again, coming toward the end of today's show, NVIDIA, John. NVIDIA is doing absolutely wild things. I believe we're both running NVIDIA cards. We've dabbled with AMD here and there, flirted with the idea of switching over. And I think AMD is really bringing some nice stuff to the space as well as pushing NVIDIA forward. But NVIDIA doing a lot of that pushing on their own as well. We just had their FY 2025 first quarter earnings call. Revenue is up 262%. No, not 26%, 262%. An absolutely absurd number to a record $26 billion. Their operating income is also up 690% to $16.9 billion. These are some big numbers, ladies and gentlemen. They sound absurd, and they actually are absolutely absurd because stuff like this just does not happen on the stock market. Gaming revenue is also up 18%, so a lot of that coming in. NVIDIA does a couple things, right? They do games, they do cloud streaming, they obviously do graphics cards, which are used for gaming and used for all different other stuff, from movie processing, just video processing in general, to crypto mining, which is also incredibly popular using their cards at the moment. But they are absolutely popping off. Again, 262% revenue increase, operating income up almost 700%. And on top of that, they just announced a 10-to-1 stock split. So if you're looking to buy into NVIDIA, it could be a good time here soon. Their stock is sitting a little over $1,000, but it's about to split 10 ways. So that one share will end up being closer to $100. And assuming, at least based on the growth we've seen so far, one stock drops from $1,000 a share to $100 a share, I can only imagine a lot more people will probably buy into that stock with it being more affordable, and these will probably pop up even more and be absolutely absurd next time around as well.
Oh, 100%, 100%.
It's just crazy. I mean, as much as AMD is pushing them in the market, and we do have other people building their own processors and trying to build their own GPUs and everything, right? NVIDIA is just so far up there right now, even with buggy experiences with G4 Experience here and there. And I know they've rebuilt the app to kind of make that a little bit more stable. The graphics cards just have delivered for decades, it feels like. And there's just, again, there is a push coming from AMD, but it just has not been enough. And both just continue to skyrocket. I mean, AMD is doing well too. AMD was up, I don't remember the exact percentage, but they're up a considerable amount as well. It just feels like if you're going to invest in tech right now, if it's not AI, which I still think is a shaky investment at the moment, it looks like graphics cards are definitely a stable one to do so.
Oh, 100%. And like with that split coming, buy in at NVIDIA. I mean, obviously it's not advice. It's just our opinion.
Mm.
But that stock's going to skyrocket again. AMD has been doing quite well as well. But like you said, like AMD's pushing NVIDIA, NVIDIA's pushing themselves, mm-hmm. NVIDIA's pushing AMD. AMD in the past 8 years has become a major, major player, where before they were just, you know, okay, you want a gaming PC, you don't got a lot of money, you just kind of want to be able to do the game, if you will. You just want to be able to load it.
Right. It was like the budget processor option, I feel like.
And now AMD is pumping out almost the same power as NVIDIA graphics cards, and sometimes they're even beating them for hundreds of dollars less than NVIDIA. And I think that's the big thing, is if AMD is still able to press NVIDIA, even if the performance may just be a couple percentages below NVIDIA, it's going to force NVIDIA to reduce the prices. And that's the big thing. And you mentioned it. And NVIDIA graphics cards haven't been used to mine cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, all other fun stupid stuff. That's the reason why the price has skyrocketed the way they did, was because they were in hot demand and they knew they could get a pretty penny for it because everyone was looking to strike gold in the whole Bitcoin thing when that first came out. Then finally, when things started to settle down, especially now post-COVID, where the demand isn't as high, there's, you know, everyone has their own crypto coin. Your neighbor has three, and that meme you saw 2 days ago now has a crypto coin. So it's now like not
so true
as exclusive, right? The hype has kind of died down a little bit, and that's helping bring the prices down also. So those prices are coming down. AMD's pressing NVIDIA, and vice versa, and those prices are probably going to stabilize to the point where a mid-generation graphics card for your average PC gamer is probably going to cost you $400 or $500, not $800, $900 or $1,100 like we've seen in past generations during the Bitcoin boom. So I think that's where we're currently at. And with that being said, with how strong NVIDIA has been over the years, if you can get in an NVIDIA at $100 first for a share, I would totally do it. I mean, I'm going to plan on doing it myself.
Yeah.
I can't afford $1,000 for the share.
Yeah, that's
but
that's
I can justify the $100.
Yeah, and I feel like it's one of those things, right? Like, once it's a lot more affordable, people have seen it grow so much over the last couple of years. I mean, shares were like $200-something back during COVID. And I was man, I really want to buy one of these, but I can't do it right now because of COVID, and just no one knew what was going to happen financially. And it ended up being one of those things that just skyrocketed, and back to $100 being a lot more affordable for the middle class kind of person. I feel like it's just going to be one of those stocks that a lot of people buy into at $100, and it would not surprise me if that jumps up quite a bit more and a lot of people get some very big gains off one or two shares even on that one. So one to watch, NVIDIA, if you're on the stock market. Again, we are not a stock advice podcast, but it is one worth keeping your eye on potentially as that stock split does happen sometime there in early June. Upcoming showcases. Guys, the summer showcases are happening, and they are happening here very soon. There's rumors of a PlayStation showcase happening in May. That timeline is starting to run out. We do know that Sony has a business report, it's not really a showcase per se, but they're doing an investor report for PlayStation Relations. That's coming next week. Typically and historically, we have seen PlayStation showcases or state of plays happen either the same day or right around the day of that investor presentation. I think it's set for Wednesday or Thursday, if I remember correctly. So don't be surprised if you do see a PlayStation showcase or state of play next week. It could get announced tomorrow, could get announced Monday or Tuesday. It feels like a lot of these showcase announcements have been, at least the smaller showcases, get announced 1 or 2 days before nowadays. So don't be stunned if it is early next week. You're like, oh, PlayStation showcase this week. Very well could happen. In addition to that, we have a lot of summer showcases. I think Ubisoft has announced theirs. Xbox has announced theirs. Devolver Digital is the newest one to announce. They have announced their direct for June 7th. Devolver's always a good time. They not only publish great indie games, but they put on a very odd and intriguing presentation that's very different from all the other directs and presentations that you will see out there. So one worth watching there on June 7th. And then later down the road, heading toward Europe in August, Gamescom 2024 is set for a return August 21st through the 25th in Cologne, Germany. And given the press release we saw from Blizzard earlier this year, I think there's a good chance you get some big Blizzard news there, potentially some World of Warcraft sneak peeks for that upcoming expansion as well later down the line in August. Other than that, we will eventually be having a kind of a show to touch on the summer showcases, probably a couple shows throughout, just our normal Level Up episodes to recap or preview. But we're also trying to plan a bigger show as well. John and I kind of teasing around dates and potential guests for that one. I don't know where it's going to end up falling because John does have quite a few commitments already on his calendar for our typical Thursday slot. So we're looking, I think, John, what were we looking at? Like June 3rd or 4th were some of the options most recently being thrown around. So potentially an earlier in the week show, potentially a Saturday show. It probably won't be a Wednesday through Friday show, at least over the next couple weeks. So we will be adjusting here and there. Stay tuned to the social media channels at OTN Media or at OTN underscore media, depending on the social network you use the most. But we'll eventually put it out there as well as on our Discord, discord.me/OTN when we do eventually decide on that date. But yeah, John's got a lot of WizDG casting, so you can check him out there on their channel as well, calling NBA 2K games. But as far as these game showcases and the previews to come from our coverage of them, we'll have to do a TBD on that date for now. Last but not least, in our news section is your favorite, the free Epic Games for the Week for our PC players. These ones are free. I did not update the date, but it should be free until tomorrow, which I believe is the 24th on Friday. I can't remember the reset time. I think it's like that morning. Or maybe it's already reset because I think these dropped recently. But either way, there are free games. Hopefully they're still available at the time of listening to this. Farming Simulator 2022. We'll make sure John does the voice before we close things out. That one's going from $29.99 to free on the Epic Game Store. And then Warhammer 40K Gladius Relics of War. Quite the name there. Microsoft did not name it, surprisingly enough. But that one is $39.99 moving to free as well. So quite a bit of value there, John. We're looking at a $30 game and a $40 game for $70 of value free over on the Epic Game Store until this offer expires.
Yeah, Farming Simulator is still not even worth that, the price of free.
Farming Simulator 2022, like, what are we on 24? I don't even know how often these things come out. Are they yearly releases?
You're asking the wrong person. You're literally asking the guy that had a clip, like, pop off because I was making fun of it. Like, no, I don't care. And if it is annual, like, talk about a studio that needs downsizing. Like, I just, okay, bad joke, whatever, I don't care. I can't, why is this a thing? It's right up there with Power Washing Simulator.
That one's incredibly popular.
Shut up. Shut up. You're going to go power wash your John Deere?
Maybe I will.
Tear you hood. So stupid. So stupid.
Joey, anyway, just, if you guys want to claim those games, go do so while they're free on the Epic Games Store. With that, John, I think we can wrap up today's show unless there's anything else you want to roll into this different news this week.
Joey, I'm playing the music. This is your I'm pulling the microphone away from you. Nation, this will do it for this edition of Level Up Live. But before you go, make sure you follow the show on Twitch to catch the next episode of Level Up Live. If you listen to the podcast show on our podcast feed, please do leave us a review. Level Up Podcast is available on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, and your podcatcher of choice. Just look us up, and we are there for you. Nation, we love to hear from our community. We love to hear from our community so much. We have a plethora of ways for you to reach out to us. Joey, what are some of those ways?
Absolutely, guys. The best way and the first way to do it is to follow the podcast and the network over on Twitter/X and Facebook. You can do so at OTN Media. Additionally, you can find us on Instagram and Threads at OTN_media. This show also available on Twitch. Again, typically Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And next time will be a different one, potentially a Monday or Tuesday. Stay tuned to those social feeds. But eventually find us on twitch.tv/OTN media. Last but not least, join the conversation as well. discord.me/OTN. Again, guys, we cover a lot of games on there, but we also do some of these sports chatting. We got some book chatting, some movies, TV, and more. Lots of good stuff happening on Discord.
No baby drama mama, though, so it's as easy as that. We'll leave it there. Nation, make sure to tune in next time. I'm going to tell you a date and time. Just make sure you follow on social media to figure out when we're doing this again so you can tune in. Do your ears and eyes a favor. Hit that sub and follow button to know when the next episode is ready for your entertainment pleasures. We will catch you all the next time we stop on. Our schedule allows us. Enjoy your weekend. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
level up.